You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what feels like the morning after the night before, the weekend before, so to speak. I'm Alex Payne. This is The Good, The Bad, The Baddest, and the rugby, a little bit of a rebrand this week to be revealed. And they are Mike Tindall, James Haskell, and Ellis Genge. Welcome back, one and all. We'll get to rugby, we'll get to ramifications in what seems like a very seismic, fairly noisy week for the game of rugby, particularly in England. But first things first, how are we, fellas? Ellis, it's lovely of you to join us. Is it nice to be back amongst the dog shit and the nappies? Or are you already missing the delights of the Lensbury?
No, I'm happy to be home, see my family and stuff. And obviously, although we're in the bubble, we still had a few restrictions and they grow a bit tedious now and then. So it's nice to have the freedom to walk around and do as I please in my own home. But yeah, the nappies and dog shit's in full force, so every cloud.
Absolutely. I did promise we're not going to swear, so we're already 10 seconds in and two for two. So we'll try and keep it clean as we go. Has it been lovely to get back? And, you know, has everyone said, we've missed you, how are you? Or is it just straight back into the chores, the DIY?
Yeah, a lot of letters and had to get rid of a sofa and stuff when I got back and go to the club for more COVID testing. Work never stops, but no, it's nice to be home, see the family. Just miss my boy a lot and see the dog and stuff. Some luxuries that you don't usually have in the Lensbury.
Tins and Hask, how are we? What's happening? Tins?
Yeah, crazy weekend really, wasn't it? Saturday, loved all the rugby. Obviously, Scotland. I was actually generally angry after the England game. Not at you, Genji, but just angry.
I'd be angry at me too.
And then that anger just dissipated in 4.5 minutes of beautiful French joy. And then Sunday got even better because a little baby boy arrived at my house.
Oh, you're wow. Kidding?
Oh, yeah.
Well done, mate.
Tins, that's unbelievable. Let's not talk about rugby. How are you getting on?
Yeah, brilliant. So, yeah, 6 o'clock last night.
That's unreal. Have we got a name?
We haven't got a name yet. No, we're still working on it. We've always struggled with that. We never picked one before they arrive. Like to
James is a good name.
Yeah, mate, possibly.
Oh, sorry. James, that's Tindall. My middle name. I can't do it.
Okay.
Since this is unbelievable, how healthy? How bonny?
8 pounds full. Very solid. Bonny. Arrived very quickly. Didn't make it to hospital. On the bathroom floor.
You're kidding me.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Mate, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so, dare I ask, how hands-on were you? Or did you have someone to kind of just direct?
Fortunately, Zara's friend Dolly is more important than I am at making sure that she's been at every three of my children's births. She was there and recognised that we wouldn't have got to hospital in time. So, yeah, it was run into the gym, get a mat, get into the bathroom, get the mat on the floor, towels down, brace, brace, brace.
Oh, my God. And a sort of a life
fortunately,
experience.
the midwife who was going to meet us at the hospital wasn't that far away, so she drove up and got there just as we'd assume the position, and then the second midwife arrived just after the head had arrived. Wow. So yeah, it was a bit garnish, but
holy Moses! Yeah. Did you have the girls in bed, or was it a sort of a family affair around about sort of post beans on toast?
No, fortunately, Zed, I think she'd sort of had contractions through the night. She hadn't slept well the night before, so we had someone take the kids for the day.
Man, this is unbelievable. How is your good lady? Is she all right? Is she sort of in bed with tea, or is she up and about and back on a horse?
As every man will say, that she was a warrior, as always. They always are. we can never judge a woman in terms of what they have to go through with childbirth. So, no, she was back up. We went for a walk this morning with him, and yeah, all good.
Did you have your first one in the hospital?
Yeah, so it's been a slow journey. So the first one was sort of in Gloucester Royal, done the right way. It was induced as well, actually, that one. And then second one was in like a low Stroud in the local birthing clinic. And then this one, we didn't even make it there. So, yeah.
I tried to think what's going to happen with the fourth. It'll be a side thing. All hands on deck.
I literally was like, yep, snip, snip, snip. I've got a boy. I'm out. I'm out of here.
How proud, you're a proud dad anyway, but how proud is your little beating heart now to have 2-1?
Yeah, the best thing about being at home, the best thing was as soon as he's wrapped up, you do your skin on skin, straight downstairs, TV room, golf on. And I'm like, this is what we and you are doing. There was actually, what ridiculously old rugby game was on? And it was Bath versus Wigan. I was like, right, we're going to stick that on first. So Bath, the cross code game was on, 96. I was like, right, you watch a bit of that. And then I went to the final day of the golf.
The training has begun already, 12 hours in or whatever it is. We are so incredibly pleased for you. That is unbelievably good news. And now you've just got a little bit left of lockdown. You can just take it nice and easy.
Yeah.
How did the girls take the news? Are they thrilled and excited? Or are
they didn't get told. Mia's actually, I think she's quite on it in terms of street smarts. She's like, why are we not going home for tea? they've had to pop out for something. Where have they had to go? We just stop asking questions. And then when she got in, she was over the moon. Yeah, but both of them were. Good problem is, Lena's like, my baby. It's like, no, Lena, right. It's not your baby. She tries to pick it up. Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, mate, that's very, very good news. It's sort of slightly reduces the need to talk about any of the other stuff. But well done. And Angela will love us for that. Yeah. I don't know whether there's something more to come, but Angela, help yourself.
I thought it was Andrea.
Was it Andrea, is it?
Yeah, apologies. It is Andrea, but I was sort of leaving. Do we let Alex out to hang out to dry? Angela. Andrea.
Sorry. No, not sure Angela's ever going to need to write about me. So, you know, we can go where we go. That is really good news. We do love to, and we do need a good news story right now. I don't quite know how to segue, but I tell you what I'm going to do, Ellis. It's very good of you to check in, and I imagine you've got a lot of other things to do. So stay for as long as you want, dive in where you want. Do you want to offer a bit of a framework where you're at with, you know, the game? And there are loads of things we can talk about. I'm just interested as to whether you are ignoring the haters, whether you're gutted, whether you're furious, whether you want to scream and shout, or whether you're actually just kind of need a holiday and we'll come back to it when you're ready kind of thing. Where are you sitting with all things England?
Well, I'm playing against Newcastle this week, so there's no holiday for sure. But
time waits for no man.
Yeah, in terms of rugby, yeah, obviously we're frustrated, I guess, as a group. I'd say everyone would agree we've probably underperformed for whatever reason. And the people who are good at finding out why will do so, and I'm sure they'll let us know. It was tough, mate, to be honest, from the off after that Scotland game, and then a lot of questions get asked, don't they? You sort of go back to the drawing board, and we had a good few conversations in camp about what was going wrong, and I guess we thought we'd eradicate the problems, I guess, and then we got caught unstuck. Thought we played quite well against Wales, but we just gave away too many penalties again, and then played well against France, one of the best games of all time, and then you play against Ireland and we got beat fair and square. So it's not what we're used to, obviously, having won the Six Nations last year and then coming off the back of winning the Autumn's Cup as well. And rightly so, like, a lot of fans had a lot of questions to ask, and their only way to do so is via social media because they're not out of the ground to scream and shout. So I guess that's where all the smoke's coming from with the online abuse. And you've seen Liam Williams got...
But the thing is, it's not asking questions, is it?
No, it's not. But it is in a way, it's them ranting, you know, it's them venting. And I'm sure none of them would ever dream to say some of the stuff I've had to my face, but they probably wouldn't say it in the stand either. Or, I don't know, I don't think they'd say it in front of their family. You know, I think a lot of these burner accounts were just a repercussion of people being at home during lockdown for this long, and their mental well-being's obviously deteriorating, and they're just making accounts to vent. And I almost feel sorry for people, some of the stuff that pops into their head. And I don't know, if I was sat there and I was typing something like that, I'd be proper questioning myself whether or not I'm happy to...
I want to come on to that. Was it post the Wales game that you got death threats?
Yeah, post Wales.
What were you actually sent?
Kill yourself, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to look after him. And a lot of them weren't even like Welsh people, a lot of them were like people from Scotland, people from Ireland and stuff. Like, there was a lot of Welsh people, but there was loads from like Scotland, Ireland, even French people. Then after we beat France, I got loads of other heat, but my brother-in-law's French, so I got him to translate a few things, and same again. And then after the Ireland game, for obvious reason, apparently I'm a knacker now. So I've had a lot of messages calling me a knacker. I don't know. I asked Noel Reid, and it's like an English in English. Something like that.
Right. I want to come on to the Ireland game off the back of it, but I mean, what the hell do you do now, and what is the team environment set up when, and I can't imagine you're the only one to get it, I dread to think who else is receiving this, but do you ping this on to someone who says we'll take it from here, or do you read it and delete it? What do you do with
I replied to a few with like the pokey tongue out face to the ones that are quite extreme, a few emojis and that, just wind them up, you know. And then I'd say 99% of them I should leave and then don't read, just delete them, block people. One person said sent in a GIF of like the people with the coffin and said, send Ellis home. And then I was like quite confused as to why he was doing that. And then I realized he was like saying, send me home to Africa with like the next few messages that I got. And he was adding Boris Johnson in the team. It's if Boris is going to reply, like, yeah, all right, I'll send him back. But I'm from Bristol, like, some people are just idiots. And it opens my eyes up to how stupid some of the general public are, you know? Like, you don't realise how many weirdos there are out there. But it's just the world we live in today. Social media, everyone on a platform, doesn't it?
If the average IQ in the UK is 100... that means there's a fuck ton of people underneath that.
Yeah, I know quite a few of them.
Can't get a job, yet they can operate a phone, which I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah, better than me at least.
I mean, genuinely, I'm not just saying this. I actually feel quite sick hearing that, and it sort of makes me really uncomfortable to talk about anything rugby-related because...
fine, honestly. Like, it's just... I could screenshot all of them and put them up and go for headhunts and that, but I genuinely don't think that's going to get anything done. And I almost think that's what they want me to do, you know, like put all these messages up, and because then all they got to do is delete their account or accounts and never like operate it again. Like, it don't mean anything to them. They don't lose any sleep, you know. And like, I didn't see any of those messages, but then like my dad's mate sent it to him, and then he rang me up, and he never rings me up to talk about stuff like that. And he rang me up and asked me if I was all right. And when he said that to me, I realised the sort of severity of some of the messages, because he rarely speaks about emotions and feelings. So, yeah, like you said, it is sickening, some of the shit that gets said out there. And like, you've seen the Liam Williams stuff. It's an elite game, you know, and like these things happen. Like, mine is obviously a bit different to his, but irrespective of that, he's a human and he's got feelings and stuff. And Wales is a small, small place. I'm sure some of these people are going to see him, and I'd love to know if they say the same thing to his face.
When people start saying, we're coming for you, is there a bit of you that thinks, hang on, this is moving beyond the boundaries of just trolling? Is there a bit of you that worries about it? Or
maybe at the beginning I thought, geez, like, one of these guys actually could be a psychopath and come and get me. But I think now I've had enough of it to realise that it's just, like I said, it's just them getting whatever else is going on in their life off their chest. They're obviously not very happy people, so I doubt anyone's coming to do what they say. But who knows? It's a strange world, isn't it?
How much racist abuse are you getting?
I had way more after Wales than what I've had after France and Ireland, but I didn't translate half of the French stuff, and the Irish game was a bit different to the Wales game. I don't even know why I got abuse in the Wales game. Oh, for not clapping, apparently, which is the be-all and end-all of rugby, clapping people off the pitch. Well, I think we're the only professional sport that clap, make a tunnel and clap people off at the end. Union, is like, they don't do it in league, do they?
I ask you, because the thing that we touched on this after the Wales game, actually, and I'd just love to know, did you go into the Wales changing room, swap shirts with your opposite number?
Yeah,
have a beer?
I mean, swapped shirts with Sheedy, yeah.
Is that because you want to play 10, or?
I think I fit the shirt better than him.
I just find it extraordinary. This is what we were touching on, is that one isolated moment is not representative of the whole, which is extraordinary. Talk to me about Ireland. Talk to me about the elbow. There's been a hell of a lot flying around. We were messaging in the WhatsApp group Free Genge, and it seems that the sighting commissioner has deemed that's the case. Ireland are up in arms about it. What is the story behind that?
Look, they were holding us into a few rucks. I got held in the ruck before that, well, both rucks before that, and then Johnny held me down for a bit, and I thought, oh, surely he's going to let go, because obviously we were picking and going on the line. and motions were flying high, and he's got a strong grip for an old man. So he was holding like sort of here and on my back. So I was like this, and I thought, I got to get up. I can't let him hold me here for any longer. And obviously my arm was locked in and I was just trying to push up. And I do understand in the video, in that 4 second clip that's been cut down, it does look like I'm putting my elbow on his face. But I spoke to him after. I think he's aware that I didn't repeatedly elbow the bloke into the neck and the head and could have killed him. And I'm like 19 stone. If I elbowed him on the face 5 times, or how many times you thought I did, do you know what I mean? It'd be a lot more than him getting up and telling the ref, oh, he's just elbowed me. I'm pretty sure we'd be fuming, you know? He was laughing. Like, I just think people, you cut this clip into 4 seconds and look what you've done, you know? And like some of the Irish punditry and some of the people in the media over there, obviously I'm not going to mention names and I'm not going to reply to them online, but you make it a lot worse for some of the players. Like when you isolate incidents like that and you bring them up, but I'll always make my bed, I sleep in it, but like, I've done nothing wrong in that situation. I've done what every person in their right mind would who's trying to win a test match. I haven't elbowed the bloke, otherwise I would have got sent off, and furthermore, I would have got cited. So I want some letters through the post from some of the Irish punditry. Some sorries, please.
Okay. I'm not sure we'll release your address just yet, but we'll send them to us and we'll pass them on.
Be a brave man who rocks around there or something else.
True. Hask, what do you make of all this? What we're hearing and watching and listening, and you know, we'll talk the rugby and the details in due course, but I'm sort of fairly speechless, really.
I mean, look, I'm always very acutely aware that nothing I say is going to make any difference. You know, back in the day, commenting on you know, like on a newspaper or something else, you were sort of immediately labelled insane, and you feel sorry for these people because they're not aware they have no effect on life. Unfortunately, now, because of social media has progressed past like newspaper comment sections, it actually is having a profound effect on people because it's they're a force. They're like a mob force that change people's opinions, that force decision. Big companies, off the back of, you know, 10 tweets, stop campaigns. People start having to investigate. Media, you know, journalists, where their rhetoric and newspaper selling was just confined to the paper, is now spread across. People can edit videos and put them out there and just force agendas. And it's so weird, you know, 100%. You know, people talk about free speech. You know, there's a big distinction between free speech and hate speech. And I don't care what people say. We're not good enough and advanced enough as a species to think we can get away with doing what we're doing. You know, you have to go at the pace of the slowest man. And the slowest man is somebody that says to Ellis, go back to Africa. That is the person that says, I'm going to kill you. Go and kill yourself. Go and hang yourself. I'm going to rape your wife. People have said that to my wife, Chloe. And it's like, it's insane. And the trolls are always going to be the trolls. And I think we've got to stop worrying about public opinion in that domain. And I think just reading the reaction to this game, it's a game of rugby. I don't watch it. I watch the highlights. I don't know why everyone's that bothered. It's a game. It's a sport. We're playing a sport. Teams win, teams lose. That's all it is to it. Why is everyone so defined by this? It's because everyone's sitting at home. Everybody's miserable and everybody's upset. Everybody hates what's going on at the moment. And they're just projecting. They tried the best. It wasn't good enough. You know, Ireland were better. Great. Rugby was the winner on the day. Perfect. Same with France and Wales. I don't know why anyone's that asked about it. And I don't know why. You know, I read the newspaper, and actually, John, I read Stuart Barnes's column. I just got I got a time subscription. I thought, incredible, you know, unbelievably great, like very articulately written, but like just slamming Eddie Jones. Clive Woodward was shot horror, miserable, slamming Eddie Jones. Lawrence Dalek, slamming Eddie Jones. Everyone wants to fire everybody. Everyone wants to fire everyone, sack everyone, get rid of the whole team and do everything. But I've been in the England team from the very start. So when did I start? 2007 to 30 to 2018, right? Some of those environments that I was involved in were the worst, most unprofessional, appalling environments of any sports team I've ever been in, ever, 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 right? And some of the people they employed were perceived as the best. Nobody knows what's going on unless you're in that squad. And I picked up the phone today and I spoke to a few lads and I said, listen, is it a case of if Eddie Jones got sacked tomorrow, would everyone come out and knife him and say he's shit and get on? And not one person said that. Right. I could have told you this. I know there'll be people that didn't get selected, people haven't picked in. Yes, he's got to make changes. Yes, he's got to change the team. But look what happened in 2018. He said goodbye to a whole set of people and we refreshed the team and he moved them on. And that is sport. And it's just history repeating itself. We go through these processes. You know, you have faith. You think players are going to kick on. They don't kick on. Games aren't pretty. England have underperformed. England were pretty shit on the weekend from what I've seen. But it's not like life defining. And I don't honestly understand why we in this country in particular have to knife everyone and sack everyone. Who are you going to replace him with? And if you did, will it be that environment? Will all the players agree with you? Why are journalists and fans telling people what to do who know absolutely nothing? Less than nothing. I know nothing, and I know more than 90. I know more than Stuart Barnes, 100%, because I speak to people in the squad. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't talk to them. No one's going to pick up the phone to Stuart Barnes. Nobody likes Clive Woodward in the squad. No one's going to pick up the phone to him. It's never going to happen. So perhaps...
Clive, hello, mate.
I just think we're just getting a little bit carried away with all this stuff, with this negativity. And I think it's very sad. And I think the unions are doing the right thing. I love what Wales did. I don't know why they didn't name them, but again, maybe you're inciting a riot, and that's what Donald Trump did, essentially. You know, if you incite a riot to attack people, then if someone went around to one of their houses and filled them in, would we be as bad? So maybe not naming is the right way to go. But I just think it's a game. Who cares? Like, honestly, it's a bit of fun. It was supposed to be fun. Like, you know what? You know, imagine being Welsh. They lost in the last fucking second. I thought they were going to win. I went to bed when they were winning the Grand Slam. They woke up. They got more to worry about. And, you know, it's madness. Anyway, rant over.
Good rant. That was a 5 or 6 minutes.
Was good.
Ellis, give us a bit of insight. I mean, you fly back Saturday night, Sunday? I mean,
Sunday.
What's the mood like off the back of fifth in the Six Nations? I mean, it's obviously not fun and games, is it? But is it we've got wrongs to right and we can do that? Is everyone terrified about their positions? Is Eddie silent? Is, you know, give us some insight as to what the 24 hours post Dublin was like.
Oh yeah, we obviously licked our wounds. Some boys will still be licking their wounds now. Some boys would have forgot about it. I moved on. Everyone operates in different ways. Everyone's going back to their families after being away from for a long, long time. So I assume most people are focusing on family time now as opposed to still dwelling on the game. I know certain individuals probably lost sleep over it, and like we had a few beers after the game at the back of the hotel, and some boys couldn't rip in as hard as they usually would for whatever reason. Like Hass said, everyone's got their own personal stuff to deal with. So I think you just have to appreciate that and how boys are feeling, and should be a bit more mindful of how everyone's operating, you know, like within their own little bubble, because it's tough, man. You spend a lot of time away from people. You're always on top of each other and high-pressure environments. People can crack. So you got to be mindful of how people are feeling. And yeah, we had a few beers, and then Eddie had a meeting in the morning with us and told us what we need to do to, I guess, get better and make sure this stops happening.
Without giving away trade secrets, what kind of a meeting is that?
It's just like a whiteboard at the front. TV screen at the front. And then it had the messages on there. And like Hash said about in 2018, I think we had a terrible time, didn't we? We lost a fair few games on the bounce. But prior to that, we had an 18-game winning streak. So he just explained to us that this is how success works. You got failure and then you slowly creep up and you have success, then you have failure again. And that's just what we're going through at the moment. So he explains how he sees it. And obviously, he's the gaffer, so we buy into that. And I think if everyone's on the same page and we've got a collective, that's somewhere we can work on. Or work from, sorry. As opposed to everyone, like some people might do, is throw the toys out of the cot and like Hass said, sack everyone and get rid of everyone. And yeah, he's gave us clear messages of what we need to do. And it's up to us as players to do so.
Do you leave feeling it's been a shocker, but the positivity is not too far away? Do you leave thinking, Christ, I'm not sure I'll be back here again? You know, where do you kind of net out off the back of a campaign like that?
Yeah, I think everyone's different. So myself, I just said, look, I've enjoyed my time. It's been tough, but I've enjoyed my time.
Have you genuinely enjoyed it? Or is that a lie?
Yeah, of course I have. No. It's not me. That's not me saying it for the sake, thinking, fucking hell, what if someone sees this and thinks I don't enjoy being in camp? Like, I've spent a long time with some people that I'm very close with. And yeah, it has been tough and there's been some shit times as well. But you find light in the bad. Like, if you have a little sap now and then, you get some good laughs and you have good memories and a lot of coffee. And you got to think as well, like Faz said to us at the end, he said, look, if you weren't here, you'd be at home in proper lockdown, you know. So you got to think about that as well and be grateful that we can actually play rugby as opposed to a lot of people being in lockdown for I don't know how long, doing nothing. So I am grateful for that. But yeah, don't get me wrong, I'm not masking the fact that we were pretty shit. But at the same time, I don't think we can dwell on that, because if we did, then we'd never move on, you know. Mm.
Were you aware over the last kind of how many weeks it is, how slated the team were getting? Did it come across you, or do you not know?
At the beginning, I was. And then now we tuned out, to be honest, I think, as a collective. Some boys were a bit more aware, but no, I wasn't reading any articles or anything like that.
But you'd say that the pressure sort of seeped into the environment.
And I think, like, irrespective of how good you are at sort of turning your phone off and not having any social media at all, like, you're going to feel that pressure anyway, just because of performance or if someone else is talking about it. That, of course, it seeps in. The thing is, in this country, mate, the thing that sells is bad press. That's what everyone wants to see, because we're a cynical bunch. Works for us and against us. But everyone wants to see bad press. Everyone wants to see people crash and burn. Everyone hates England, so it's even better for them. I think even the English hate the English. So it's easy for them to write bad articles and get good views and clickbait and all that sort of stuff. It's a lot easier for someone to write Ellis Genge repeatedly elbows Johnny Sexton in the head, as opposed to Ellis Genge held by Johnny Sexton and tries to get himself off the ground, you know? So it get a lot more stories selling by doing that sort of stuff. So if Faz doesn't have the best game in the world and someone wants to write a clickbait article, that's what they're going to do. I think that's what they've got to do to keep their job, to be honest. And they got to wear that, you know? Then it's funny, because you do press them with the writers and they expect you to be your best mates and talk to them freely, but...
That's the irony of it all, and it's been that way for 20 years. Since the time the players, all when it was an amateur and all the press used to go out with the players, so they never wrote really a bad article, that when it became a high professional sport, they have to be opinionated for people to think that they care about what they read. And then obviously they don't write, a lot of them can write a balanced piece, but they don't get to write their headlines, and the headlines basically ruin the piece, because sometimes a player will never get beyond the headline because of what it says. And I think as a player, you either have that personality where you use it or you shouldn't read it. Because as we've always said, the only people that matter are your coach, your loved ones and your fellow players. And as long as they're happy with what you're doing, and they'll let you know soon enough if they're not happy with what you're doing, and you know you'll have to change some behaviours, whereas everyone else can do one.
I tell you what worries me for you, Ellis, is that because you verbalised it and you've bitten back, that you now become a magnet for it, and that, you know, there are people who aren't on social media and don't react. But I worry for you now that whenever, whatever, for whatever reason, people will come for you, because it's sort of drawing a louder crowd. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I said to you, my dad gave me a ring, and when he was chatting to me, he said, "I don't know why, but everyone hates you." And I said, "Dad, honestly, I don't care. As long as my family love me and my friends like me, I'm not bothered about what anyone else thinks." But it has come to my attention that for some reason, everybody absolutely hates me. I'm actually all right, I think. But everyone honestly hates me. Like, if you look on social media, I'm the most hated man in Ireland. But I get on really well with Noel Reid, so...
The other thing I'd say, though, is often these things turn round. You're not retiring anytime soon. But if you were to talk to Dylan Hartley, who has been, you know, he was hugely unpopular in the media and on social and was getting it left, right and centre. He was sent off in a Premiership final. And now everyone loves Dylan because he says what he thinks. He's been there. He's walked the bad line. He's come around again. And I do think everyone loves a comeback story. And you know, your rugby can do your own talking in that regard. And it's not much consolation now. I just sort of wondered really whether you were fussed about it. Whether you're quite, are you going to delete social? Are you just sort of...
No, I don't think I'll delete social. I think the reason everyone gives me so much heat is because I say what I think. And obviously, I'm aware that if you do speak your mind, then other people are going to speak theirs back. Whereas you can just stay quiet and not say a word. And you probably still get a load of heat as well. But I'm not going to let people dictate what I do in my life and let it affect me like that, because it's not living, is it? Like, I want to live and do what I got to do. And I'm very aware that social media isn't life. But if I want to have social media, and fucking hell, we're talking a lot about social media, aren't we? Like, who actually cares about it, man? Who actually really cares? Except for, I don't know.
You are absolutely right. We have put a lot of oxygen around this. It just sort of...
Do you know what I mean? Because this is what people want. They'll be at home now saying, I sent him a tweet. I told him to go back to Africa, you know? And like, he'll be so happy with himself. I'd love to...
Alice,
I want to be called Alice. I want to be called Alice.
2021,
no, branding you. Alice.
I actually said Alice. It's like a combination.
My Norwegian name.
We're forgetting about the social media for a bit. You know, I sometimes hammer the media, but I use them as much as anybody. They're a really important tool to grow the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. I think my arguments are, you don't always have to hammer just to be controversial. And if you don't agree, you still don't have to hammer. You can focus on other areas. Are there any media go-tos that you have? Any guys that you don't mind that you know that you are open to kind of your personality?
Like I said, mate, I understand why people write bad articles in controversial headlines. So I'll chat to anyone. I don't hold any malice against any people. There was one writer from The Sun that I didn't get on with before the World Cup. Then we went to Bristol. I had to do a piece with him. And I told our media guy, look, I don't want to chat to him. I won't say what I said about him. But then he said, oh, well, why don't you actually talk to him and tell him that? And I was like, sweet, get him out. So I told him. I think he was a bit, not startled, but a bit shocked at what I said to him. And then we shook hands and I actually chat to him now. And I don't think he's that bad a bloke, but I think he has an appreciation and a bit more respect for me that I told him what I think of him. And yeah, we're fine now. So I feel like that's my issue with anyone who ever writes anything not bad about me, whatever, do what you got to do. If you genuinely dislike me as a person, don't come licking my ass when I got to do an interview with you. Or if I see you at the stadium pitch side, you know, like Hask, if you went out there now and you'd done something for the Times or whatever, some one of these tabloids, and you started writing stuff about me, expect me to roll up and say, Hask, what's going on? Like, expect that. Don't be shocked when I come up to you and I ask you questions. It's like Brian Moore when he comes to England camp and he'd been slagging me off for 2 years saying that I've got a convicted rapist as my Twitter header and all this and just slanting me everything I said. And then when I seen him, I told him what I thought of him and he was like, what's going on? What have I done to you? And I was like, bruv, writing shit about me for 2 years. I finally see you. Just expect me to be your mate. Like, it don't go down like that. So I feel like in this world, I just feel that's all there. Media in general, not even necessarily social media, is just so powerful and it is such a, makes people feel so strong and, you know, you just get stuff off their chest and then they're not like accountable for it when they see you in the flesh.
I played a game once where I actually wasn't supposed to play because I broke a hand and then I read a Stuart Barnes article and he slagged me. So I was like, fuck it, I'm playing. We got man of the match. And I did a live interview afterwards. I went, I'm only playing because of you. You said I was shit and I shouldn't play. So I played. There you go. Played against Tim Orr and knocked him out. Cheers, boy. Knock him out. He was just poor tackle technique for Moore on his part.
Yeah. I'm very conscious that this sort of framework we're operating in here, I mean, it's, you know, it's three former players and a very former journalist. And I have stood on that other side. And I think your reaction, Ellis, and I would have said it to anybody, is exactly right. Shake hands, look the people who write about you in the eye and tell them what you think. And I always think the people that run from the journalists they're not helping their cause by doing that. I think you have to look people in the eye. And Tins, I always actually look at you, funny enough, as a really good example, which is, and maybe I'm talking out of turn here, but you and Barnsley were not eye to eye as player and journalist, but actually you quite enjoyed a pint with each other at Cheltenham over the horses. And there was a sort of differentiation between the two. Am I making that up or not?
No, it took me a while though to get there. I'll be honest with you. When I sort of said that to him on live telly, we weren't there yet. It took me a little while to just sort of get over it. But like Hass said, yeah, until you understand the beast of media is, it was hard. And then I realised, you know, he just flipped and flopped around to whatever suits the agenda that he wants to push. And once you get that through your head that's what you're doing, you know, that's what you have to deal with. You know, when me and Nooney were in the centres, Jesus Christ, it's fucking tin hat on all the time. So, but then, you know, you've just got to go with it. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, there was only one time, I think, one time when Robbo dropped me in 2008, I was like, thank fuck for that. 1 week where I'm not going to get abused. I'm the shittiest centre in the world. And then someone else stepped in and they abused him instead. And it was just like, and then you sort of realise, well, it's not really us that's the problem. You know, yeah, we're not playing well, but we're trying.
Can we have a few minutes on the rugby? Can you put your finger on, were you overtrained? Were you not joined up? Was the environment so sort of COVID-tastic that no one was actually enjoying themselves? Why did England end up in the place that they ended up?
I think there'd be a lot of excuses if I were to say any of that. I think like we have to actually look at ourselves as players, although it sounds quite cliche, and we actually probably just didn't play very well. And almost sort of felt as though we should have won, you know, like as if like we play Scotland, we should win. At Twickenham, like we should win, but we didn't. So I can't pinpoint what's gone wrong in the last game at the moment, at least. But it's tough, isn't it? Because it's a team game. So there's 15 people on the pitch on your team, obviously. Sometimes 16 if you're playing against England. There's so many different factors and demographics and things that can go right, things that can go wrong. So for you to say this is why we lost is such a sometimes easy, sometimes hard thing to say. So right now I don't know, but like I said, the people in the position to find out why, definitely let us know. So
can I ask you a different question, which is that there are times you come off a field and you know you've been beaten by the opposition, and there are times you come off and you feel you've beaten yourself a little bit, or you've not fired the shots that you have. When you look back at this campaign, do you hold your hands up and say, you know, we weren't good enough? Or do you look back and think, actually, you know, we didn't do what we wanted to do?
Yeah, we got to win. So obviously we didn't do what we wanted to do.
But often you can do what you want to do and still not be good enough.
No,
and I just wonder.
I understand what you're saying. No, yeah, we didn't do what we wanted to do. A lot of the time stuff went wrong for us for whatever reason, most of the time discipline, and we weren't good enough to correct that. And test rugby, like, you can't give away, not stupid pens necessarily, but I think we painted a picture that we were a ill-disciplined team when I actually don't think we are. I think we definitely push things. Like, we've got players who are amazing at what they do, Maz, Tom Curry, these players who everyone was saying, I think everyone's still saying Kaz was amazing, but everyone thought Maz was the worst second row in the world at one stage. And then the week after, again, he's Lions captain. And then the week after that, he's the worst player in the world again. So again, it all reverts back to me for opinion, and it's high pressure environments. And this is what happens. People have up and downs. It's just that when England do it, it seems to be the end of the world.
Do you feel like you were equipped by the coaches to go out and win that Six Nations?
Yeah. Massively.
Okay. If I was to ask you, Ellis, people think I'm putting you on the spot, there's no other answer. Is Eddie the right man for the job?
I believe in Eddie.
Do you think that's a general consensus?
Everyone believes in what he's doing, yeah. In our camp, at least, anyway.
The point of this show is that always to try and occupy the middle ground. And, you know, one current player, two former players, and a great relationship with Eddie. I mean, we love having Eddie on this show, and, you know, we're not apologising or apologists for him, but you can quite clearly see from the three of you that you all believe he's the right man for the job. What I don't want to do, Ellis, is sort of turn this into purgatory and get you to kind of offer yourself to be whipped, etc. Where are you going to get your next belly laugh from? What are you really looking forward to in the next 2-3 weeks to kind of clear the head and get back into the fun stuff in life?
Playing this weekend.
Don't lie.
Genuine. I'm not lying. I swear to God. I swear. Just want to play this weekend and show what I'm about, because like you said, a lot of people sending me messages and that, calling me a coward and shit like that, obviously gets to you, but I just want to be able to play and show what I'm about again. So I don't feel like I've shown the best of myself over the Six Nations. So
I was definitely that guy who takes that into a game and uses it as a motivational factor. I sometimes say you shouldn't do it, but I think it made me a better player. Is it someone, do you thrive off that?
No, I don't think, yeah, a few things I do, but in certain moments, you know, like, it's the people I play against that sort of motivate me. It's hard to describe, but no, I'm not going in there thinking about the tweets that I receive. I just go in ready to play, and my mind and what I think about motivates me during the game.
We love you. We love the fact you say what you think. You know, this show is, it's not quite the Thelma and Louise of podcasts, but I think we all know how it ends, and it's probably with one or two of us going to jail, Hask. And we kind of keep riding until that happens. It's a lot of fun. It's sort of like playing with fire. You know what's going to happen, but it's still quite fun playing with fire. And, you know, I'm hugely impressed that you've come on, and, you know, you've said exactly what you think. And I think people should show a hell of a lot of respect for that. And, you know, there'll be some that react against it. That's what they always do. But I think it's been really interesting, and I think it's been ballsy of you to say what you've said.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, as Hass said at the start, it is a game, and you do it for a living. So no one cares more about it than you, because it's your living.
And yeah, like, it's one thing I will say, and I've said a lot, obviously, but for all the people who write stuff and have their opinions and that, if for one second you think myself or any of our team go out there and genuinely don't want to win every single second of every day and training, everything that we do, do you think I put myself through game training on a Wednesday to not be a part of a winning environment? I wouldn't do it, would I? Do you know what I mean? We run ourselves into the ground and we train as hard as we can because it's what the game demands. I'm not complaining about it, but it's, we do it and, like, show some respect, you know? Like, this is people's livelihoods, it's our craft, and we work as hard as we can, invest my whole life into something, and then people come out and ask, question whether or not we actually want to do well. And like Eddie, the same, if you think that guy doesn't go out to win every single training session, every meeting, everything he does is all geared towards winning. So it's just a bit mad, isn't it, how people sort of cook up these ideas.
I want you to go and have a Thai green curry, forget about it all, get ready for the weekend, rip into it, and smile and enjoy it. We've got some quite fun things lined up, actually. We'll pop them in the WhatsApp group. Come and have a giggle and go get stuck into it in the meantime.
Cheers, boys.
Good on you.
I feel we haven't...
I'm not sure we've helped
at all. We haven't lifted here, have we?
I don't think we have.
Oh, boys. I'm fine. Do I seem pretty dark? Yeah. Maybe I am dark. I don't feel that. Maybe
oh, God, right.
I'm questioning myself.
You're ballsy for coming on. You're ballsy for fronting up. You're ballsy for doing what you do. And that's why we love having you as part of our gang.
I'm looking forward to watching it this weekend.
Yeah. Me too.
Go do your thing.
Cheers, boys. Anyway. See you later.
Love you, man.
Yeah,
man.
Cheers,
Jesus, I think we've just given him... Yeah. He didn't have a mental health disorder. We've just given it to him.
But actually, do you know, I think it's a really interesting hour that we've had because... There are a lot of people out there that write a lot of things, and I'm not talking about the trolls, etc., you know, just in the media. And I think sometimes it's just really interesting to have a very honest and open access point to the people who are doing it left, right and centre. Hask, I thought your questions around the environment and around Eddie were absolutely bang on.
And this is the thing. And obviously Hask knows that environment. I don't know that environment. You know, my frustration goes from... I want England to be brilliant all the time. And now, obviously, the players want to be brilliant every time. And as Hass said, Eddie's got a 78% win record, the best England coach, I think, of all time in terms of win.
Most successful English coach of all time. 76%.
So for any person on this planet to question what he does is not correct. And obviously, then Hass has always said about the environment he creates and everything else. Now, at the moment, something is slipping between the consistency of delivering on the field. Now, that can happen. You know, professional sport we'd like it to be a fine art that you can stay at the top of all the time, but it doesn't work like that. There's bits and pieces that can then drop performance levels by quite a bit. And I don't think there's another person to take over at the moment, but we've got to find a way of getting that, because that team is quality throughout. And it just annoys me that people bag it all the time.
It's interesting when he talks about change. I was thinking about it today. And you log on to the Telegraph, actually, and just all the articles are, is Eddie Jones' time up? It's Austin Healey saying Eddie Jones must go. And there was a very interesting article about who might take over if Eddie Jones does go. I'm just trying to find the reference point for it. But it's Rob Baxter, Pat Lamb, it's Michael Checker, it's Joe Schmidt, it's even Scott Robertson. I mean... What I think is interesting, I think Eddie Jones has got more in the bank in terms of World Cups. And we've seen what happens with England when you head into a World Cup with someone who hasn't got the experience of that tournament, 2015, Martin Johnson, 2011, etc. Tins, would you stand by the credit in the bank and the experience of a tournament just being so valuable at this point and therefore give him the chance to work it out?
If I'm honest, if you'd asked me after the Scotland game... And after the Wales game, I could say I don't think he's going to get changed or whatever. I'm sort of swaying of having seen his interview that says, you know, international coaching should go more than 4 years that came out of Eddie Jones's mouth.
That was BT, wasn't it?
Yeah.
3 years ago or something.
Yeah, but still, it doesn't matter.
They popped it up. No, I'm just referencing it for those who haven't seen it.
But my only issue with England is the way they played for a year. And then you see that France game. So, and it's not Ellis's question to answer because it's not really sits at Ellis's door. But what has changed from France to Ireland? Is it as simple as things just didn't go their way? Which I don't quite buy, because then what I don't see and what we've talked about is things changing. You know, the first 5 minutes of that game, their biggest three most international, most capped players did crazy things that cost England position. And gave all the impetus back to Ireland. And that was how the game then was set, and that's how it went all the way through. Every box kick Ireland hit, they had a kick to compete on, which they messed up quite a few of ours. And then everyone obviously bags Elliot, but actually the kicks are so good that he's jumping into traffic with someone else jumping for the ball as well. All our kicks, they caught quite comfortably. And then Ireland, which I'd never thought I'd say, had more intent to go and play. You know, they played those 23 phases. 20 of those phases, but bear in mind, they got nowhere. They got smashed by England defence. Then a crossfield kick got them behind. And then they had another six phases of getting nowhere until they got two pick and goes that went through. And then it was a good pick and go from the number eight that got over. But my issue was England got to open sides all the time. And then they, you know, Elliot Daly kicked the ball off his left that went straight to touch when he had a perfect opportunity to run. England had some phases. The intent that was in France against France, where they ran everything, well, not ran everything, but had a good balance between playing phases, they didn't do that against Ireland. And my question was, if they changed the tactic to suit Ireland, then he got that completely wrong. And it's, and Ireland, as I've said for years, only play one way, and we play straight into that what they like. I question that. But then, right. But then we talk about, you hear Hasks and everyone, every player that I've spoke to about the environment he creates and how much he demands of players and what he does to players, and his win rate. And you go, well, he's not a bad coach. So why, then it becomes the, oh my God, if Carl Hogg listens to this, who used to just go, why all the time, why has it been so flat for a year? Even though they've won a Six Nations.
So what is your answer to that? Why?
Well, maybe it does need freshening up. Maybe it needs someone to go in and go, right, we're just playing all the time. That what I was trying to get across is, does he go on the field? And I said, do you feel you're in an environment when you can chip and chase? Do they actually have fun? Because sometimes it doesn't look like many of the England players have fun whilst they're playing.
Ask. You've been there, you've done it. Is it fun?
And yeah, that's not down to the coaching. Or
well, anything. Actually, and that is a really good point, because Ellis said post-Scotland that actually the camp isn't fun right now. But that's not necessarily an Eddie Jones thing or a license to play. It's just the fact that you COVID lockdown.
I know I get labelled as this. I'm obviously a fan of Eddie, right? It's undeniable. But
you're the only one who's lived in that environment, so no one else can actually judge you on it. So
yeah, this is true. But I'm not an idiot. Like my argument always with this country is that we're always sit football first, sack everyone, but change does not necessarily equal success. And having been in England camps, right, having been with you, Mike, and everything else like that, being as an England player is so much more than just coaching, putting someone on the field. It's a whole structure. It's how you approach weeks and weeks on end away, game plans, environments, getting the best out of players, selection, you know, the environments you actually train in, all those nuances. I take it for granted. If you could show me somebody like, you know, Rob Baxter, for example, of all the stuff I've done at Exeter, I think he'd be brilliant. Michael Checker, I think, would be brilliant. But I don't think people just think it's going to be like an instant fix, are going to be sorely mistaken. And I think Eddie, you know, a bad period of time in one of the hardest periods we've ever faced, with the fact that I think my criticism against him, right, is
it's not the selection. Hardest thing. They lost seven on the bounce, and then he went on and got to a World Cup final.
What I meant was in terms of the stuff off the field. Like I remember, I spoke to.
Oh,
spoke
sorry.
To,
okay.
No, but you're right. You are right. It's a great point to make. So I spoke to a few of the lads. Apparently, you know, camp was awful, boring, terrible, depressing, no fun, no, not ability to have any fun. England, you know, need to be whiter than white, because any mistakes, our media will be the first people to knife them. You know, and say, you know, all so-and-so was seen out doing this, doing that. You've seen it with football. They did what they had to do. I know, for example, other teams were, you know, weren't slightly more lax, because they don't face the same pressure and scrutiny as we do. That's not an excuse, but it's just fact, right? Mm. If you could tell me, as I said, who was going to change Eddie, I would go for it. But I don't believe there's anyone that could do what he could do. I don't believe it needs to be. And I think the only criticism of him is selection, because we need to freshen things up in that respect to bring something through. But he's going to do that automatically. I promise you, after this, those players, the likes of the Browns, the Cares, the Haskells, the Hartleys, whoever else got moved on, but where people were like, I can't believe that's happened, this is going to happen to the squad. I don't know who you'd label in that category, but those guys are not going to be seen again. And it's going to be unfortunate. It's going to be sad. But the new crop will come through. And with a new crop, new intensity, new ideas, new ways of playing. Remember that you don't build a game plan that you want to play. You build a game plan to the players in the team. And that's what people forget. People go, I'd love to play like the All Blacks. Okay, have you got a whole set of front row that can pass the ball across the line, you know, and do all this? No. Okay, well, can't we teach them to do it? Not really at international level, not in a fucking, you know, not in a short period of time. Let's pick the game plan to the players we've got. And maybe with a new set of players, it will freshen it up. But I think some guys have played their last games.
So if Marcus Smith came into that team, would he change the game plan to suit Marcus Smith? Or would Marcus Smith have to try and play the game like Owen Farrell?
I mean, the problem with it is that I know everyone's criticised the attack. This is obviously never my area. So we, I knew when we wanted to, when we wanted to play fast, you know, he encouraged, us to carry hard, you know, to little tips and to play that, ball, to play on top of them, to play at gain line, to play with momentum. And that's what we did. In terms of like, I never sat in an attack meeting and was like, Owen was like, this is what we're going to do. They just told us what we were going to do and this is how we did it. But because it suited those players, I would imagine if you changed them up and put, you know, your Sam Simmons is in, your different people, you would tailor the game because it gives you more freedom to do things. And I think, you know, I think that's what would happen in my opinion, really.
Going back to being balanced, you have to go back to, you know, when they won the Grand Slam with Ford Farrell at 10-12 and they scored a shedload of tries. And I know they had Jonathan Joseph at 13, they had Elliot on one wing, Johnny on the other wing, and who must have been Brownie at fullback. So, you know, think, yeah. I mean, whether it's just a funk or whatever, but it's frustrating.
Can I ask you a macro question, which is about some of the parts, which is I started watching rugby in 1990, I think, and then you got spoiled with three Grand Slams in 5 years for England. And since then, there have been two in the 26 years. Two Grand Slams in 26 years since 95. Wales were one tackle away from their fifth Grand Slam in 16 years on Saturday. So why is it that a country of 3 million people and four pretty average regions, if we're being honest about it, are so much better at achieving way more than the sum of their parts, whereas England, with 55 million people, the biggest budgets, 12 outstanding teams, are not able to reach those levels of consistency? Because I think this is probably what it comes down to, is consistency of performance for England. One week they're brilliant, they smash the All Blacks, the next week they fall apart against the Box in the World Cup final. Last 2 weeks ago they beat France. This week, obviously, they disappear in Dublin, as it were. Why can England not achieve what the resources suggest they could and should?
Eddie's the most un-RFU man that's ever been employed. Everybody else suited that environment. And you know, as I said to you at the start of the show, some of the worst environments I've ever been at, a club, and I've played all around the world, were involved in England. You know, just lack of professionalism, no understanding how to win, terrible mental health, cognitive well-being of players, awful. Depressing environment, overtraining, incompetent levels of training, infighting with coaches, negativity, everyone out for themselves, poor medical, poor, like name it, right? And with the biggest budget. Why? Because, you know, you had Warren Gatland and Sean Edwards that are two of the one of the best coaches in the world that encourage players to go out and do things completely different. The WRU, they ruled the roost, those lads. They were able to do it. They specialise in putting teams together like that. And they're two absolute rebels. If you go in those environments, like Warren and Sean, I think Warren's mellowed in his older, you know, older age in comparison to the way he used to be in front of the media, what he used to say. But, you know, those are some of the best coaches at doing it. And they were their own selves. Sean Edwards, encouraging lads to go out the pierce. And, you know, that's why they were successful. They had fantastic coaches that specialised in creating a mob mentality against the world and put everything into place. Warren Gatland had a blank ability to put his medical team. He took Craig White, Paul Strigeon, Prav Mathema, Sean Edwards. Anything he wanted, he put in there. Or a few like, oh, you can have that coach, but you can't have that. Or we can have that guy, but we can't have that. You need to do this, but you need to do that. Or we can't offend the clubs. Oh, shit, the media. We can't say this, don't do that. Suddenly, Eddie Jones comes along, and for once, we actually did something that we wanted to do. And if you ask Tins, didn't that wasn't exactly what Clive Woodward did. Yeah. Didn't he just go, I'm going to do everything around me? If you have permission to, well, you tell it what it was like under him, but that's what I believe. If you're able to shape your own team with a blank check, that's fine. I guarantee if you placed Eddie Jones, they'd go the other way again. And we'd suddenly go, you can have that, but you can't have that. We can't do this, but we need to do this.
Yeah, I mean, that was the biggest change that Clive brought in, was the fact that he got the RFU to agree things that he'd never done before. You know, he took them to Penny Hill Park for the first time. His budget was... He brought proper professionalism to that England team before anyone else had it, which we obviously then benefited from.
If you'd had
I'm a big fan of Sir Clive, as you know, but I did think it was quite interesting when he said at the weekend, is Eddie Jones all powerful? Because I sort of feel that Sir Clive was all powerful. And that's the way you find success, isn't it?
Of course. I spoke to those guys because I was such a rugby nose. And I would speak, you know, I spoke to guys about like Clive. I said, well, you know, was he the best coach? Was it amazing? And they were like, well, yeah, he put everything in place, but we had some unbelievable leaders and we sort of ran the ship. Well, that's what I heard, Tins, because yeah. I asked. And they were like, look, he built structure at the start. He dictated. But basically, the lunatics took over the asylum, as far as I'm concerned. And you know, that team could have won if he wasn't even there. I'm not doing a disservice because obviously he put everything in place, but that's what I've heard from about 10 of you lot.
He provided the environment for us to get better. And I don't think he single-handedly did the making us better bit. He put the environment together with the coaches that, you know, yes, you can judge the coaches of where they went in future years, but at that time, with that group of players, it was the best environment I've ever been in. But, you know, because you were there to get all you were to get better, you felt that you were getting resources from loads of different sports that you could learn from. You were pushing tech to another level with the tight kits, the contact lenses we used to wear, the eye coaches he'd bring in. So you actually felt that you were, the whole point of you being there was to get better. But then you're right, with the player group that we had and the experience that we had, you know, when Clive came up with a crap idea or whatever, then they could just bat it down and he trusted them. So if they said no, that idea would just get put in the bin and he'd go find something else. But, you know, he wasn't on the field, you know, not necessarily on the field coaching. He had an idea of how he wanted the game to be played and then he put that to his coaches to go and deliver. And then with the players, that's what we did.
But that's what I heard it again. But it's the same thing. What's the link between a successful environment under Clive Woodward, a successful environment under Warren Gatland and Sean Edwards, and a successful environment under Eddie Jones for a period of time? Was being able to control it, do what you need to, leave no stone unturned. Don't take what's put in front of you. Take what you want and what's the best for you. And you can see it in all three of those successful environments. Yeah. You can see it in any successful environment in the world. That's why it works. And that's what I'm concerned about. It's not as simple as just getting someone in to do that, because it, you know, you have to go from the top to the bottom. And I said with Martin Johnson, if Martin Johnson had been allowed to do what he was supposed to do, which was be the front of house, the head, set the standard, set the tone, use all his experience, have the likes of Wayne Smith with him and cherry pick everything and have nobody that inherited from another regime, I guarantee would have been successful. But no. It was like, you can have that, but you can't have this. I don't want to do this. Here's it. And
he didn't even get his own team, really, did he?
No.
He just got brought in and he had what he had. I think if I was him, I'd have pushed for not done it unless you changed house. But there's still a question of, is there a shelf life? No matter how good a coach you are, is there a shelf life?
There is, but only if that person isn't eager to keep working on themselves.
Yeah.
And how many times do we hear Eddie's gone off to speak with these people, speak with us? I'm not, again, I've got no vested interest whether he's England coach. I don't give a shit because it doesn't affect me. I don't play anymore.
You don't even watch it.
I don't even watch it. Like, I don't care. But what I can't abide, and it's the same thing you made, Alex, about the media, is that I'm not bashing the media. And some of the journalists message me on my Twitter or thing, go, well, you know, we're always having to go. You know, we're always very good to you. Yeah, look, whether you're good to me or not, you are the tastemakers of the nation, the media. And rugby is a complicated sport that a lot of people don't understand. And they look to you to suggest the taste and the direction. And just going after people to be sensationalist without some sort of level-headed thinking, without some sort of calmness, forgetting that your flippant comments and your great rhetoric and your unbelievable verbiage can leave someone with mental health problems as you carry on. And the fact that you open up, you basically, if you slag a player in the way, or you slag Eddie Jones, you green light morons to do it. That's why Donald Trump almost got impeached, because he incited a riot. And the excuse that we're in the public eye and the excuse that we're in the media and you just got to suck up it, it's not fucking right. It doesn't matter if I'm in the media or not. It doesn't matter if I put myself out there. You don't get to do it. You can be critical, but when you do personal attacks or when you green light the morons, that's where you go wrong. Remember your tastemakers. I'll fucking come around.
There you go. There's a t-shirt. There's a t-shirt. Remember your tastemakers.
Remember your tastemakers. Okay, a couple of quick bits and bobs just on this, because I sort of feel in some ways this is a really hard show to do, because I think we try very hard not to do clickbait. And if you're not doing clickbait, you just sort of end up going round and round and round a little bit. And in many ways, the lack of sort of structure to this show is symptomatic of why people end up clickbaiting, because you just throw something out there and it's done. And
Haskell for team manager.
I feel Ellis has been raked over the coals, which wasn't our attention. What were we going to say?
Oh, no.
I said Haskell for team manager.
Haskell for team manager.
Richard
Central
Hill,
contracts? Now you're sacking others. Central contracts, is that part of the problem for England and this search for top flight consistency, or is that just another excuse? You look at Wales, who've got access to their players, and well, I suppose they're only partial central contracts. Ireland now are able to rest Conor Murray and Johnny Sexton whenever they choose. Scotland are now much more in control of,
every other nation is pretty much centrally contracted apart from England and France.
Right. Therefore, is that a problem for sustained top flight success for England?
No, I don't think it is. Okay. I think all the players would like to have a bit more time off, but then if someone's ripping up trees in the Premiership and then they can't get in because they're not a centrally contractor. It depends. If every player is centrally contractor, then people move up and down with ease, then possibly, but it's never going to happen. Unless it's a pipe dream because the clubs have so much power and both our nations and both France and England command most of the people who watch the sport in the world. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to change. Would it fix it? I don't know. I'd like to think it would. It would make it better, but I think we play at pretty high levels anyway. So I'm not entirely sure.
You nodded enthusiastically, Hoff.
Yeah, just purely because I had a conversation with somebody I won't talk about, but they were relatively high up in an organisation. And I was having a conversation and they asked me what was the reason why England weren't consistently sort of number one in the world and everything else like that. And I genuinely think that it's the lack of joined up thinking between the clubs and England and the team and, you know, whose vested interests we're serving. You know, when the players are with the clubs, they're very much club players. Most clubs I went to were like, England are coming in, you know, and we'd have a meeting. And then as soon as they left the meeting, you're like, you're not doing that. You're not going to do that. We don't want you doing that for us. You're not going to play like that. We don't even want to do that. And then you go to Eddie and Eddie spends 8 weeks trying to get you up to a standard of fitness and intensity, a thing, you know, attention to detail. You're back to your elite best and then you're back to your club and then it drops down unless your club has those standards.
Is that not moved on at all? I'm sort of basing this on the fact that I hope that people have moved on a little bit and clubs and country works a bit better than what it used to.
I guarantee, I don't know if he'd say it because he'd want to cause a riot because the last time he said something about, an owner and a coach or whatever, he got in trouble, didn't he? But I think my concern is that, for example, even look at New Zealand, you know, they obviously have that tight, well, at the moment they've got the tight close thing, but they don't have relegation. They've got those teams, you know, a lot of those guys are century contract and contracted with the clubs. They play a certain style that feeds into what the All Blacks do. They're on the same sort of page. They have the conditioning linked up. The Welsh players, I'd love to see this stat. I don't know if it's true and he deserves every accolade. But Alwyn Jones, you know, to play the attritional position he's played and played so well, does he play an awful lot of games for everybody else? As well as
yeah, he does. He plays as much as he can for the Ospreys, I believe.
Fine. But that's what makes him fire. I've always wanted to see whether he has, because I just wondered whether that was a secret. I was looking into secret. I was trying to pin my hopes as to why he was still so good and such a world class player, and I was crap and retired. But I think central contracts would make a difference just because it would allow some more joined up thinking, which I think is missing in England, because we saw it with the pay cuts, everything else. Who's running the game? Who's in charge? Well, Eddie's in charge when he's got them, but when he doesn't have them, what's the standards? And it's human nature. You only go back to the pace of the slowest man in your team, even though you shouldn't. It just becomes natural habit. You know, if your team are gassed, you haven't got great conditions, you're not playing that well. And then it can affect everything, I think. It does make a difference.
The other thing I wanted to ask about was form against credit in the bank. And I suppose if you're looking back, and to be fair, he's had his hands tied because there were obviously pretty tight COVID constrictions around who could come and who could go over the course of the Six Nations. But Tins, on reflection, that form against credit in the bank, is that now, do you think, probably the one area where we'll see the biggest sort of slider across the slider scale?
Yeah,
some used up their credit, I suppose. Because we know what these players can do because they've done it on the highest stage.
And I will repeatedly always say this: no one who took that field on the weekend is a bad player and doesn't deserve to be there. There are different ways of playing, as Hask has said, there's different ways of skinning a cat or whatever. But I think he missed a freebie. We've said this before. I think he missed a freebie with the Sarries boys. Would he be in this position? Would Eddie be in this position if he had have taken all those Sarries boys out? I wouldn't have taken the Toji out. Not in a million years would I have taken the Toji out. But if you'd have taken the other boys out and just said, look, because you haven't played. Or, I mean, you could have left Marrow out and see where you're at with your second rows. But
it's the Six Nations. If England don't pick, you know, imagine the reaction if he'd left out the five key guys who everyone would have said were fit, fresh and firing.
But yeah, you answer all your questions. He wouldn't have a comeback. No one would be going the way that they are now because they would go, oh my God, it just shows how much we need those five players. But then also it answers the question that everyone keeps throwing out in the fact that there's no leaders. So if you're taking one of those massive leaders out of there with Fazio, Toji, obviously Jamie George, those experienced players, you have to, it makes people stand up. So would it have benefited the team in that? Now, I don't know whether it would or it wouldn't. I mean, it could have not, and we could have ended up well where we are. Or maybe we'd have lost to France and we'd have won one game. My only inkling is are we... Do the players have fun was one of them in terms of, are they allowed to go and express themselves in the way they are, or are they so rigidly to a game plan? That is one of my questions, because in that game on the weekend, it looked rigid and it has looked rigid for a long time, whereas it didn't look rigid last week. That's the frustration for me. That is why my skin was, my blood was boiling on the weekend, because I know that we're better than that Irish team and they just didn't show it for whatever reason. Actually, Jordan Murphy was making me angry as well, because he was quite green-eyed.
I quite enjoyed the point scoring between him and Lowell. That was a very, that was like a Leicester Wasps throwback to those European games of years gone by.
Yeah.
Okay, look, we've gone round the houses and...
I don't know whether we've got anywhere, though.
Well, I keep repeating the fact that this is not the show, and if you've come this far, this is not the show where we scream and shout about everyone getting sacked. I think
we're definitely not there.
I think Ellis has been, you know, extremely honest in really difficult circumstances. It's not very easy for him really to have said anything other than we weren't very good, and we still believe. What I would like you to both do is just to kind of sum up what we have discussed. Where is this England team and what should happen now, Hask?
Look, I think the England team is in a state of flux. I think there'll be a huge amount of sea change after this tournament. I think some players have played their last game for England. I think others will be brought in. I think this is the reshaping circa 2018. I think Eddie's going to go back and look at himself harder than anyone else, like he always does, because, you know, they're going to have a big review. And I think that, unfortunately, you know, because he has a character that isn't everyone's cup of tea, which I know a lot about, you know, he's going to be under pressure for this period of time. But, you know, we had this last time and we went all the way to a World Cup final. Is it possible to do it twice? Yes. It's hard because I always say about being kind and stuff, and it's bad because I'm kind until someone comes at me and then I'm like, burn the house down, scorched earth, honestly, Khrushchev in its finest, which is fine. But my caveat is that they did attack me first. But I think we just got to rise above it. Remember, it's a fun game of rugby. To be honest with you, I didn't see 1 minute of it, and my life is no different than it was when I woke up this morning. I had bigger fish to fry, and I think we all do. Remember, it's supposed to be a sport, and I truly believe Eddie's the man for the job. You know, at some point he's going to find other people, but it's not as simple. It's just firing everyone, bringing it in for all the reasons we talked about.
I always try and find a balance to it, to everything. And when I've talked about how teams play, it should be balanced. And at the moment, my issue with this England team is it's not particularly balanced in how they play. I think it's very structured, regimented, and I feel that we lose some of our talent now because of that, and then they take unnecessary flak for it, and Eddie then takes the brunt for it, but then that doesn't really appease anything, and that's where the frustration of the fan comes. But I will always go and say none of these players that are playing that game are bad players, but I think, as Haskey's saying, you've got to be kind. There's being rude and obnoxious for the sake of being rude and obnoxious without knowing anything. But there is also a reasoning around questioning things. Mm. And I know that Eddie is brilliant at his job, because he wouldn't have an 80% win record with England. He wouldn't have taken England to a World Cup final. He wouldn't have won whatever, how many Six Nations he's won, three or whatever it is. Mm. So that immediately, you know, and from the insights that Hask give, that he's a good coach. But I am starting to question now whether it is just what's been delivered on the field he would do with a break.
Well, he's got until November
to completely get away would help him or something, because I just see in so many games as doing the same thing. We're not moving on. And then you get to a bit where you think it is, which was against France, where I was like, just please play like this. Just get on and do it. And we didn't do it. Now, where the nuts and bolts are, that's not for me to. I'm not as good a coach as Eddie Jones is. And that's not for me to solve. You know, I would just say the reasons that people are firing in questions is because he doesn't, if he keeps ignoring it and doing it his own way and it still doesn't produce any results, that's why he gets the pressure. And that's what he's got to live with. And whether that comes down to change, we'll wait and see. But I think it'll be quite close to change. But then who do you replace him with?
We shall see. England for back-to-back Grand Slams 22 and 23. You heard it here first.
And I'd love it if they did. I'd love it if they did, but...
Keep believing. Okay, just before we go, and I'm conscious, you know, I hope it hasn't been a monathon, but I think it's been just a sort of cathartic experience. We didn't touch on it posting them Wales for the obvious reasons that we stated. Well, actually, sometimes it's quite good. I mean, this would be, I presume, a Sappuccino Club type exercise.
Well, what actually, I do want to finish. No, it wouldn't be a Sappuccino Club because there have been very few laughs.
Okay, is, true.
In a Sappuccino Club, there's probably a lot more swearing.
Yeah, we've tried to keep it clean and PC. What I do want to quickly finish with, though, is reflection on France-Wales, utter chaos. And what I haven't fired is my shot around England Grand Slams that have disappeared up in smoke. But I counted them up the other day, and I think there have been 6 Grand Slams that England have lost away from home in 18 years. 99, 2000, 2001, 2011, 2013, 2017. And actually that started me digging a hole, which is that England statistically finish a lot of their tournaments away from home. And I think there's something in the fixture list, but let's not do that now because that'll just make me a complaining little Englander. But England have had 14 of the last 21 seasons they've been away from home in the final fixture. 6 of the last 10. Whinging?
I've lost 3 of them. So yeah, it's fine. We should have played at home. Yeah. Always going away.
It does seem that England, they never get, whereas Wales have won 4 Grand Slams and all of them have been at home. And the one Grand Slam that they've lost and blown in the last day was on Saturday, away. Anyway, let's not go into that.
It would be interesting to know on that, because I always believe that in the Six Nations, the top 2 ranked teams going into that Six Nations will always play the last game. So that is why you'll get upsets like that, because the top 2 rated teams will play will be the final game. Now I'm not sure whether that's always the way or what it is, which is why a lot of the time England always have Ireland away.
Oh, now we found out about it. Who are we going to have to?
Where are the fixtures drawn
now? Norse, Dublin. Norse set that up, but I think that is why. But England. But then it'd be interesting to go back to sort of the Wales teams of 2005, 2008 or whatever, and when they won. But where did they go in?
Finished against Italy, or they were never, because they weren't top teams going into them. They always
it's the ranking going in dictates who, well, that's what I've heard now, but right. That's true.
Anyway, somebody will tell us much more in that. I just think it's interesting that even the 2 Grand Slams England have won in the last, to whatever it is, 21 years have been away from home. Yeah. They never get to a final game at Twickenham. They haven't since 95 to win a Grand Slam.
This is a nightmare.
Do you think we found a conspiracy theory? Do you think we're just moaning for the sake of it?
No, we've found a conspiracy. Let's stick with that. Right, start the show again.
How many have those been away in Ireland? The majority of them.
2001, 2011. 11 and 17, so 3 of them. 3 of the 6 have been in Ireland. Yeah. 99 was at Wembley, 2000 was Scotland, 2013 was Cardiff. Quite
it's
interesting.
Appalling, isn't it? It's appalling.
We digress. Chaos in Paris, Tins.
It was unbelievable. I mean,
how do you sum up that game?
I generally don't know. You know, Wales looked in so much control in the first half, they knocked France off their game, and then... I mean, you can never write this French team out, and it's great for French rugby in terms of that fighter spirit and coming back. But those last 20 minutes, I was just like, what is actually going on? Then France need 2 tries, and that's 8 minutes to go, and they take a scrum that takes 3 minutes. And I'm like, but then they score. And you're like, well, okay, you've got 5 minutes to hold out, and then the flop on penalty, and you're like, that's all you don't need to do. And then... I give so much credit to Fiku for how he could have butchered that try with a miss pass, and he just held on to it and waited and waited and waited, and then just picked off a 2-on-1. Kids, that's how you get it done.
You've both blown Grand Slams. Do you have sympathy for Wales, or is that too much to ask given the history you do?
Oh yeah, of course. I'm devoed for Wales. You know, I think what a story. You know, like when you stopped playing, I'm like a hopeless romantic for the big story. Like I loved it. You know, I wanted France. Like, if France going to win, win the Grand Slam, and I thought that, you know, I was 100% behind them doing it because I thought amazing for French rugby. Then when Wales was like, you know, Everyone criticised them. Wayne Pivac was the last person. Everyone was going to fire.
I was about to say exactly that.
Eddie Jones flip-flop, isn't it, that one?
Yeah.
Wayne Pivac, inexperienced. Where's he come from? You know, he's crap. Get rid of him. You know, and then suddenly he wins the Grand Slam. And everyone, nearly wins the Grand Slam. Well, nearly. But I thought it was going to. I thought, what a story. You know, everyone was saying Wales haven't played a good game. They're the rub of the green, some sort of luck. And then they're in it. I was like, I wanted them to win it. I was like, yeah. And I went to bed. I was shattered. And I went to bed and it was their Wales were up. And I was like, oh, I literally rolled over to Chloe after reading my book. And I checked my phone on Sky Sports. I said, oh, I think Wales are going to win the Grand Slam. She went, oh. I went, yeah, night, asleep. And I woke up and I absentmindedly checked over breakfast thinking, oh, I'm going to see all the boys at Alan Jones lifting. They lost it. I was like, how the fuck did you do that? But I love it. That's what I'm into in rugby. That's what I'm into sport. The adventure is the thing. Personally, I don't care. And I love the Welsh boys. I love the French guys. Devo for them, because I thought, what an amazing story, what a turnaround. Wayne Pivac was so nearly in the money, so close, like me, always so close to just being successful.
I reckon he'll be all right, Wayne.
But they're the madness games you want to watch, you want to see everyone laying everything on the line, and it still pisses me off that they then get slaughtered on the end of it.
Because
it's a bad performance. You know what I mean? That's what I tried to say about that French game. Obviously, Ellis would have been gutted, but I wouldn't have been gutted as a fan watching that game. I'd have been upset for England losing because everyone, you know, you could see the passion.
They played their part. They fired their shots. They put it all out there.
But and you want to watch those games where sometimes someone wins and loses. And it sort of annoys me that people don't have that emotion in them to just go, well, we've witnessed an unbelievable game. We want our team to win, but we've been treated to see, to steal Maxi Lafife's, the gladiators in this macabre sport going at it.
I love you know, the fact that people, you know, obviously criticize Liam Williams if he meant to do it, and that he's not going to be more Devo than anybody else. But do you know what it is? People like that are the equivalent of, if you walk past a car crash or a car in a ditch, you go, can't park there, mate, and drive off.
I love that clip.
That is the equivalent of what people are doing, and that's what they forget. They go, oh, you're crap, terrible. You're like, oh no! Sorry. Did I do something? Because I've just noticed that when I get red card, a yellow card, people playing the obvious game, can't park there. That is what you're doing when you're pointing it out. And they say, mate, I just can't. Why would you even tell him? Why would you even criticise him? He knows better than anyone. It's just in case he didn't hit his lowest moment, we can just force him lower. Yeah. That's what you're doing.
Madness. Who lifts the trophy on possibly Friday night? France have got to beat Scotland by 21. Or Wales, I mean, Wales have got so much to gain and so much to lose, but just have to do it all from the sofa. Who wins the trophy?
So do France don't need a do they need a bonus?
They need
point?
A bonus point win
and by 21.
By 21 points, which I have to say, particularly with the way Scotland played last weekend, could make for.
I think you could see something
globetrotters.
Oh, you could see something bonkers again.
Did you see it's like something like they've got to win by 20 points for 4 tries or 21 points for 6 tries? Like, there's someone did it. I don't know if it was on the good, the bad rugby. Someone did all the connotations. And I was like, oh God, can't we just let Wales win?
That was before that game, wasn't it? The Wales game. It was what if they won by this? What if they won by that? Whereas now they just need to win with a bonus point try and by 21 points.
And a winning margin of 21 points. But you played in that chaotic Saturday, Hask, didn't you? When you had to beat France by 27, was it? Did you play in that? Did you get yellow card?
That was a great Super Saturday.
I did. I got yellow card because I tripped up that French guy. And do you know what? Yeah. We won that game.
You won by 20, and you had a line out. We've heard this before. You had a line out with 2 minutes to go, 5 meters out, went for the corner, and didn't score.
Yeah.
To win the game. Stop me if you've heard that one before.
We have. We were 20 points up. And I gave a yellow card. When I gave a yellow card with Eddie against Ireland, he brought me back on. Stuart Lancaster was just like, no. Like, if you get the yellow card and your coach just takes you straight off, that's like a double knifing. It's like, you know, that's like psychology again, 101. If you do that, you're like, oh, shit. You know, I'm never going to play again. So I'm like in tears in the changing room. We lose. We win, but we don't win. And then people on social media going, it's all because of you. We beat him by 20 points.
We won the game.
How does it feel like you ruined it? You let your country down. Kill yourself. Worst thing, my dad wouldn't talk to me either afterwards. I was like...
Was he messaging you that as well?
No, well, that's what I normally get on
That was just the family WhatsApp group.
The point was, I was like, I would have normally taken it, but even I used to be a bit in down on myself. That's why I talk quite passionately about this, because I know how bad it can affect people. And I was always down on myself with these things, confidence-wise. But even I was beginning to go next day, hold on a minute. We won by 20 points. Like, there's not much more. Like, I didn't really have that much to do with it. But yeah, that was a nightmare day when we just saw unbelievable running rugby. That was also a Courtney cut. The same bloke I tripped in half.
Plisson, Jules Plisson.
Yeah, I tripped him up going away. Yeah, it was such a hit. Like, that now will be like a criminal act or something like that if Courtney did that now. Bloke's head almost came off.
Yeah, his but it was a completely legal hit. Shoulder.
Yeah, I got there as fast as I could.
Late hit.
Just
I thought, always, I thought the law on late hit was always you get two strides. You get to plant your foot twice. So you can have one on the floor, plant again, and then hit. It's like catching a ball in NFL. You get to drag your feet. And he just absolutely...
Is that right? I never knew that.
I think if you can... Because there's no way he could stop. No way. So then if he doesn't follow through the tackle, he shoulder charges him, he's a yellow card. So he finishes, he absolutely ends him. But yeah, I thought it was 1-2.
I didn't know that.
If you don't hit him within that two. Am I just a fountain of knowledge tonight, or am I just making shit?
I think you're just making it up.
Sounds
like something you could go, no, that's in the laws. That's 4.1 of the tackle break. Because now I would have seen people that have been a stride and they're getting done with a red card. So I'm not sure that anyone's read that law anyway, but I like where your head's at with it.
Who lists the trophy? I think we were going to answer that.
France, Wales. I don't know.
I reckon you'll be doing something totally different.
I think there could be a mad game ahead, and I think France will definitely score 4. Because Scotland can play for their highest position in the championship in, what, how long?
Let's say 12 years.
So...
I've made that up. I
think it's
longer
than that.
We're just making stuff up tonight, doesn't
it? Yeah. So they have a reason to play. The great thing is all the players are allowed to play, which is fantastic.
Well done, Prem Rugby. Yeah. Credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Well done,
right,
Prem Rugby.
Perfectly the right thing to do. I think the Six Nations has been so good that it needed a good game to finish it. I think France will score their 4 tries, but they'll only win by 15. So I think Wales will win it.
Oh, Jesus. Which makes for a great couple of last minutes, few minutes. Good.
Because it's at home as well, isn't it? It's back in France. It's their 2 home games back-to-back.
Back in Paris.
I think France are going to do it. And I've got no allegiance. It's not like I want Wales not to do it. I just think they're like fired up. The confidence. You saw the passion. Fabien Galthié in the press conference.
It's brilliant.
Sean Edwards in the wings. The French players. You know, people have fallen back in love with French rugby. It'll be a magic. But remember, and never forget this, I've never cared about anything as much as I care about myself. That's what I don't understand about the people who get involved in sport and they live and die by their team. Why are you bothered so much? Worry about yourself.
Good. That wraps up another shambolic episode. What's happening tonight? Bath time, are you on night feeds or are you...
it was great. Didn't get that much sleep last night. Just don't know what you obviously ask. You haven't had kids yet, but I struggled to sleep the first few nights because I'm so worried that I'll wake up, it's not, and this sounds really negative, but he might not be breathing or something like that, so I have to get up and check the cot and stick my ear right up to make sure everything's okay. I did a lot of that last night, and then I did some unbelievable turds last night as well because they have to get rid of all the whatever it is. So it was up the back, round the head, that was the luck. Right. Hask, good luck, son.
I cleaned up one of Bertie's poos and I accidentally put my finger through the bag into the shit. I had to walk like this. Chloe made me walk behind her while I was holding the dog poo bag. I had to move around like E.T.'s finger. And she basically, I had to go take it to the garden, jet wash with the hose, 4 times washing my hands. And she was like, how have you managed to get shit on your finger? And I went, old special hands, couldn't get it through, you know, we've got to fix the bag.
You know, when we put in the WhatsApp group that we're going to try not to swear, can we leave feces stories out of it as well?
Baby poo is not as bad as dog poo, anyway.
No. I'm so pleased you turned. It was a real... Because we discussed this before, and we've sort of not quite got it right. It's a like, genuine surprise, but I'm so pleased for you. And... Yeah.
A certain producer might as well. But I said I'm not going to tell you guys because then it will be a genuine thing.
When have you got like a short list of names? Do you think next week we can have a name exclusive, or is that probably a bit too much to ask?
Maybe on the Thursday show.
How are you going with your campaign for
Mulligan?
For your preference for Mulligan?
It's not going.
You're not winning that one.
I'd even demoted it to a middle name just so. So just imagine if it became a golfer. professional golfer, and it was, I don't know, whatever his name was, but he had like a boxer's name, so it was something Mulligan Tindall, and it'd be just called Mully on tour. Oh, amazing.
Your kids could be like Billy Elliot. Dad, I just want to dance. I wanted to play golf, Robbie. I've got to dance. That's what it's going to be like. I just got to sing.
Ask whatever he wants to do, he is allowed to do.
Oh, you need to bring back some names. I think like Gary. Gary
Mulligan. Apparently, Gary is the biggest dying name.
No. Wayne.
Yeah, Wayne Gary Tindall. Is like, it's
I think
out.
Gary Tindall's got a lovely ring to it.
Wayne Tindall. Terry Tindall. TT's in the house.
Blade. Blade. Blade.
Tindall. No, Blade's modern. That's way too cool. Oh. We've offended every Gary, Terry, Wayne out there. Apologies if that's you. We love you, really. I really want to do like a really fun show at some point. It feels like we've been wading through the thick stuff recently.
How long till we can group hug in the same room?
I don't know, sometime in 2022.
Is that April or not? Or is that
we do need to get into a studio sooner rather than later, I think.
Is it not April that we can do working six?
Let's aim for that.
Or do we set social distance though?
Any other business? Anything interesting? Hoff? Any brand endorsements?
I'm super excited about Tind. If you watch the first part of that video, I know people listen to Zordia. I was like hand in mouth. Just the whole story, the dramatic nature of it, the fact he's going to be an unbelievable dad. I've seen him in his like dad situation. Because he obviously could be quite a gruff northerner, if you don't know him. But when you pull back that experience, he's an absolute fan. And he's got wonderful kids. Zed's amazing. So I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited about the fact that, you know, we don't have to be serious again because Six Nations over. Don't really care. My single's out still, killing it. Did the guest mix for kids. And I've got dinner to come. So I am utterly excited about everything that's going to happen. And I'm interviewing Jack Whitehall tomorrow. And that's it.
Tins, be good. Look after you and your wonderful family. Hoff, look after yourself and your wonderful wife. And let's do this again with big smiles soon. Remember, everybody, it's a game. It matters an enormous amount, but it ain't life or death. Well done, Ellis, for coming on as well.
Yeah.
Let's hope he's back rampaging sooner rather than later. That is it for this week's The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. Well done, Hoff. Well done, Tins. Thank you again to Ellis. Don't forget our sister show, The Good, The Scars and The Rugby. If you haven't seen it or listened to it, please do check it out with the wonderful Emily Scarrett, Elma Smith. Tins, are you back this week, Tins?
I'm not on this week.
Not on this week. Okay. Well, the last show was with Tins as well.
No, but I know it all anyway.
Checking my phone. I haven't had an invite on that show yet.
No, I think they came for a more premium nature than you're able to reach. It is really good fun, though. And it not only digs in and around the women's game, but it talks about some fascinating elements, pressure, nerves, high performance, etc. And you can get that from wherever it is that you do your podcast or YouTube. Tins and I are back on Friday with our Premiership preview show. And we'll have a very special guest for you next week as well. Something a little bit different. A one club kicking legend, club captain, country captain, and just a genuine all-round inspiration. Won't take a rocket scientist to work out that Hask is not back for that one. Thanks again for listening. Thank you for watching. See you in 7 days' time. Rob Brydon, over and out.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.